Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and today I have as my guest, all the way from Portugal, sitting here right beside me, not online, not on Skype, but actually live and in person, David Souza. Hi there, David.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well. So glad that you came in, and you're going to be on a lecture tour we've got going then right now, so you're kind of in the middle of it, right?
Yes. Tonight is my fifth lecture, and precisely here, where we are right now,
not in your place, not right here.
Yeah, exactly.
And so let me back up a little bit. That this, of course, is your first lecture tour in the U.S., I guess. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And for those of you who are listening who may or may not know David, he was a FISM winner, and that was in, what was the year?
2006.
In Stockholm. Okay, I thought it was a little bit further back, but it was in Stockholm. Okay. Mm. And you had won with what is called the Red Envelope Act.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you're preparing for a contest, there are so many things that are involved, you know, leading up to that. Mm-hmm. First of all, obviously developing the act even before that you ever present that.
Yes, of course.
So mm-hmm. Is Portugal kind of a hotbed of activity? I always think of Spain as being, you know, certainly one with, you know, Juan Tamariz and Rafael Benatar and some of the other.
There are several FISM prizes in Spain. Mm-hmm. It happened that in 2006, for the first time in over 50 years, two FISM awards went to Portugal, mm-hmm. which was my award, the second award on stage, Manipulation, mm-hmm. and also Elder Guimarães. He won the first prize in card magic. Mm-hmm. So for Portugal, it was something like, whoa, after all, it's possible.
And
six years after, in 2012, in Blackpool, another two magicians, a duo, Tana Manga, also were awarded the third prize in general magic, precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yours was with Manipulation in particular.
Yes.
I know that there are various categories. For those who haven't attended a FISM or may not understand the different categories, tell us a little bit about...
The categories of FISM. Yeah. For starting, I'd like to know that it's only for magicians, because when we perform for lay audience, mm-hmm. who cares? It has to be magical.
Right.
At FISM, I was competing on Manipulation because it's kind of a classical manipulation act. Everything depends on me. Mm-hmm. I'm not a comedian, so I'm not competing. I was not competing in comedy magic. I was not doing mentalism, so mm-hmm. Out of question. Illusions is when you have something big on stage, you make
furniture,
an elephant. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense that I would be competing on Manipulation or even in general magic, mm-hmm. because general magic somehow contains everything. The name general magic explains that. But, and I'd like to mention, because you asked me about the categories, that a few months before FISM, I was competing in South America in Flasoma, mm-hmm. the Festival de Latin America. I decided to compete in general magic because I spent 2 years improving my showmanship, my mm-hmm. character, and in Manipulation, the showmanship is only 30%, and the technique is 40%. In general magic, is the other way around. The showmanship is
40%.
40%, yeah. And the technique is only 30%. So I have to believe that the showmanship was and is very important.
Has a lot to do with your presentation and everything about how the audience reacts to you.
Exactly, and mm-hmm. also because usually Manipulation acts, not always, but many times, it's they are showing off. There's a lot of technique involved, but the technique is visible. I think that in magic, technique shouldn't be visible unless you assume that you are combining juggling with magic. And there are very good acts which combine magic with juggling. In my case, You cannot see me juggling. Mm-hmm. Of course, I do something technically not very easy, you know. I have palms, I do lots of things, I make envelopes and cards appear, but I try to look it like magic. So, for lay audience, it shouldn't be called manipulation, because I'm not skillful. Yeah, but for magicians it works differently, you know. But I decided to perform and compete in South America,
In
general magic, I could be changed. They could change me.
It's up to the judges to decide. We're going to put you in a different category.
Yeah,
if they think you're funny, they put you in comedy.
Exactly,
for example.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But in order to get a higher classification, otherwise you're not supposed to be changed. I got the second. I got a silver magic wand in general magic.
Okay.
In manipulation, I would have won. No first prize. And I have points enough to be the first. Yeah. But it was a good experience. At the time, I wanted to become a professional and an international magician. I was in my last year. I was studying theater in the college, in the university. And
in Barcelona?
No, in Porto, 20 kilometers from my city. Mm-hmm. And I was, the last 5-6 months before FISM, I was like sleeping like 3 hours a day, because I was having theater shows, rehearsals, like almost every day, classes, the theoretical and, you know, like dancing, like acting, like singing. And we were having rehearsals till 11 p.m. And I drove back home every day, or almost every day, sometimes by train, sometimes by car. And I was rehearsing every single night, like 3 hours.
At the theater, at the university?
No, once at home.
Oh, at home, okay.
Occasionally I took my props to the theater.
So that I could rehearse
there.
Mm-hmm. With the lights and everything, yeah.
Yes, sometimes with the lights, sometimes with the lights off. Yeah. It depends. And it was a very intensive period, that 6 months before FISM, when I decided that I would be competing at FISM, when I was allowed to be competing at FISM. After Flasom, I won the second, and no way, I'm not going to compete at FISM. But I have two friends of mine who encouraged me a lot. David, you have to. No way. Mm-hmm. But they supported me a lot. They pushed me forward, and it happened that I competed.
Well,
and
that is something with FISM that you just can't say, well, I want to compete in FISM. You have to actually have won something and represent a country or an organization or something, and then don't you have to be appointed by somebody in order to say, this is who I recommend? I mean, like by one of the judges or somebody, or a representative? How does that work?
In Portugal, they usually do a kind of a competition. It's not a competition. It the acts or the people interested to compete at FISM, they should show their acts to the Portuguese Association of Magic.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of a competition, because there's a jury, and the jury will say, oh, you're ready, you can go, or you cannot.
So it's really, they weren't presenting you with a trophy or any kind of an award. It was a matter of either you go or don't go.
Exactly.
I see. We will recommend you or not.
Yes.
I see.
And they supported me, they recommended me, and after 6 months, because I gave you as a reference, last summer festival, it was in January or February, after half a year, it was FISM. Yeah, I was there. And actually, even before I did the Flasoma convention and competition, I, just in case, I suggested me as a participant, competitor at the World Championship of Magic.
Yeah.
Probably I wouldn't go, but I show my acts just in case I wanted to. And I'm glad I did it. Otherwise, it would have been impossible or very different.
Why were you reluctant to go? Your friends were saying, well, you'd won second prize, and so, I mean, what was holding you back? I mean, it wasn't fear. I mean, you probably had confidence that you had a good show.
I thought that I had a long way to go. But actually, it was very intense. That long way, a big part of that long way was made during the 6 months before FISM. The act improved, a lot, I would say. A few changes in terms of effects.
Did you have a coach, or did you, was this, you have another director, producer?
I have a very special friend of mine, a close-up magician. Not anymore. He's connected into the magic world. He's a consultant, a big friend of mine.
Can you name him?
Of course, I would. Yeah, his name is Ricardo Pereira. We were working together. I was helping him on close-up. He was helping me on
stage.
Yeah. But it happened that he helped me more than I helped him, because at that time, he's a bit older than me, his tendency in magic was to be a consultant. His spirit didn't have the performer spirit, and he felt much more comfortable giving like instructions, try this way, try that way. It was a very important person for me in order to polish the act, to develop the act, and then polishing the act, of course. I think I answered your question already, right?
Yes, you did. Let me go back just a moment before Flesoma. Was Flesoma, I mean, that was a pretty big thing to actually perform at a contest of that size. Yeah. I mean, it's a big convention. That wasn't your first competition, was it?
It was not. It was not. But I also didn't do all the conventions before FISM. I was like in Portugal doing every year the Magic Valongo Magic Convention, sometimes as a guest, sometimes as a competitor, eventually in Spain. But I jumped straight from Peninsula Ibérica. How do you call it in English? Portugal and Spain. Both countries together is a peninsula, Iberic Peninsula, maybe.
Okay, yes.
And I went straight to South America, and I was like investing my money, because I really wanted to be recognized, as I told you before, to become a professional or international magician. And at FISM, I already had some people who could recognize me, but in general, I was a totally unknown guy.
Right, but for the most, but some did know you because they had seen you perform and win at these other conventions.
Portugal, Spain, and South America.
By answering my question, yes, that you you had competed and won in some other lesser events, I guess, kind of getting comfortable before the stage and knowing what the audience and the judges are looking for, making sure your time. Of course, you had it all rehearsed and everything, I guess, up at that point, but you'd won a few things before that you took it then to Flesoma and then kind of went off from there.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So after Flesoma, was that when the jury locally there in Porto had said you were going to, represent you or recommend you?
Yeah, after, I told you before, I guess, it was in Lisbon, not in Porto, my city, because the Portuguese Association of Magic is based in Lisbon.
Okay.
And, before I go to Flesoma, I just showed my act to them, just in case I wanted to be a competitor at FISM. Even I was thinking that, I wouldn't go anyway, so that's what I was thinking.
Sure.
Yeah. And,
you had never competed before at FISM.
I competed before FISM. I am South America, Flesoma, in Portugal and Spain.
No. But I mean at another FISM.
Oh, another FISM. No, it was... Oh, I'm sorry. I did.
Okay.
I did. In 2000, FISM was held in Portugal, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And I was 18, and I was like the national champion of manipulation, first prize by the Portuguese Association of Magic. And I represented Portugal in manipulation. There were other competitors, but I was there as a manipulator, and it was a very nice experience. In 2003, I didn't make it in The Hague, Netherlands. And in 2006, I knew what the FISM was already because of my experience when I was 18.
Yeah.
And in 2002, I was very happy knowing that I had points enough to be the first and that I would be in the final gala show competing for the Grand Prix. I didn't feel pressure at all because it was already a victory when I was announced as a Grand Prix competitor. It means that FISM gave me points enough to become the world champion, more than 80 points.
Yeah.
And I was not pressured, actually, because I was so happy.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, who cares? I'm already a winner. So.
And so, as far as what that has done for you, you had gone there with the intention of wanting to launch this into a career as a full-time professional magician, which you then were able to do?
Yeah, that's why I went to study theater, because I didn't want to become a professional actor. I just wanted to look for tools to work in my magic, and I believe it worked. Coincidentally or not, Elder Guimarães, yes. The other guy who won at FISM at the same year, we were in the same class. Mm-hmm. We were the only guys that I remember of that decided to go to a university studying theater acting, and I also studied 1 year of stage management, 1 year before I started the acting course.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't feel it immediately. Yeah, you get the tools as you are going, and as you are trying different characters, you are studying a lot of different things, you are practicing, you are training your body, the conscience of your body, which is very important, especially for stage magic. Yeah, everything was useful. I don't regret anything. Yeah,
so you recommend that if someone is going to be going into stage magic, they definitely need to study theater?
Not definitely. It's one of the possibilities, but the more you know, the more you've experienced, it will be shown on your artistic part, in your creations. When you put something together, everything that you learned, everything that you are, will be shown there. You understand?
Yeah.
So theater is a very practical thing because you learn how to communicate, how to speak with the audience, how to control the energy, lots of things, the body, body conscience,
right.
Lots
choreography
of
and choreography, blocking and everything,
singing, walking, and you get aware about a lot of things that you were
plus,
not before.
Plus lighting and sound and things like that you would learn in theater that you may otherwise only learn by experience.
It was very nice during the period that I was studying, to have conversations with people that were studying lights and sounds, because one of the available courses was precisely lights and sounds.
Right.
And, of course, when I was a magician already, not a professional magician, I remember that I was a pain in the... I was very, very annoying because when I started doing questions, I couldn't stop. What about this? What about that? But I would like to do something like this. What would you recommend?
Right.
We became friends. We had a good relationship. But I admit that I was a little bit annoying. Yeah.
It's interesting that you had helped to instruct a friend of yours, Ricardo, I think it was, about being more stage, and he kind of, or rather, about close-up, and he was teaching you some things about stage. So it sounds like that your first interest was more in close-up than stage.
No, the thing is, he was not teaching me something about stage. It was a brainstorming. To put a lot of ourselves together, let's think, does it make sense? Because it... Sometimes you don't need a magician to work with you. Sometimes you need a smart person or...
Just a director, someone outside, a third party.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ricardo somehow was doing that role. I was the actor and she was directing somehow. Mm-hmm. Somehow I wanted to direct as well. But the process of putting together the act, let's try this way, let's write the script. First, what I wanted to see myself doing on stage. And then, okay, this is brand new. I never saw it before. Mm-hmm. So let's try to find a method to make it possible.
Okay.
And sometimes it was possible, sometimes it was not. Everything is possible, but sometimes it's really difficult or very expensive.
Right.
So, yeah, so we started to cut. This is not possible. Let's try this way. And sometimes suddenly, okay, let's try. Because sometimes with the flow, something just comes up. It's like in the theater, sometimes we are just improvising something and something comes up. Oh, that is great, director
says. Remember to keep that in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I try many, many times. Like, okay, I put an envelope here, another here, cards here, inside the pockets, wherever.
Right.
And, let me, when I get that point, let me see if I have like an impulse to grab something or to do something. Yeah. That kind of devising stuff, that kind of exercises, and everything put together. Yeah. It worked, but it was a very difficult process. Everything is difficult.
Sure.
If you really want to work hard, if you want to achieve something to go at FISM and to be recognized by FISM, it's tough. I believe that there's no one that says, oh, it's easy. Unless the act was created a long time ago with lots of work, right. And after 20 years, okay, the act is still good.
Said, okay, well, I'm going to go and compete. Yeah.
Yes, but it was a hard process. Mm-hmm. Tonight, like in
Richard
my lecture...
Richard Ross or Tommy Wonder or somebody.
Whoa, I'll speak about this tonight, the process, the problems I have, the methods, because sometimes you reach originality when you are trying to make your dream come true. Mm-hmm. I mean, for my first effect, for instance, I just bounced the gloves into a ball. Okay. I never had seen it before. I have to find...
Using a tappet?
I don't have an ordinary tappet. My jacket is totally, you know, it's closed.
Okay.
So I don't have that
it's
traditional...
It's not gaping open.
And I had to find my own method to make that possible. Mm-hmm. And it took time. It took 1 year until we came up with the idea of making the gloves, the transformation between the gloves and the ball. It took 1 year. And while I was not ready to do that effect I dreamt of, I was just replacing it for other stuff. But finally, after 1 year, maybe I'll try this way and it might work. And it worked.
Well, that leads me to the question I was going to ask about your creativity. It sounds like what you're doing with Ricardo, is that a he or a she?
Ricardo is a guy.
It's a guy, okay. Yeah. I thought a moment ago you said she, and I thought Ricardo sounds like a gentleman.
Yeah, translating to English like Richard.
Okay. He's Richard, okay. That you actually sat down and kind of wrote something out, or you kind of had some ideas that you scripted out. There's one way of trying to create the act, but as far as, let's say, like the gloves to the ball or whatever, was something that you say, I was dreaming of. So are these, it sounds like you have a different creative process you go through. Sometimes it may be brainstorming with somebody else, it may be jotting something down, it may be just waking up in the middle of the night and saying, oh, this is an idea that will work after you've been thinking about it for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so what actually is there a creative process that you have? What is that?
The ideal, but I must admit that the skeleton of my act was born in 1999. Mm-hmm. I did it only with the single production, split fan, interlock production. I chose the music, and it happened to be the same music I'm still using.
Can you briefly just talk about what is the act? I mean, so that way I kind of know what...
The act, the Red Envelope Act.
Yes, right.
But at that time, it was not called the Red Envelope. Actually,
correct.
There were no envelopes at all. The Red Envelope only came up in 2004.
Okay.
After I started, you know, putting a lot of energy into the act. It was 2 years before FISM. 2004, 2005, two years and a half before FISM.
Okay.
So, at that time, I was only putting together tricks, effects that I knew how to perform. I must tell you, in 2004, the method changed totally different. It was no longer, I like this, I want to learn this, and then I choose a music and I put it together. Maybe I edit the song to make sure that this moment is at this point of the song. No, that changed. It was like, in order to reach an originality and something different, we should write a script. So what I want to do? I want to do this. Sometimes it's impossible, or it seems to be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But if everything is written, this is the ideal process. Not 100% of the act was created this way. Lots of adaptations. I had that good piece that I want to keep. And sometimes I assume, okay, this is a manipulation act. Makes sense that I just make it appear. And there's no, apparently, a great reason why. Of course, in my act, I suggest one atmosphere, a romantic atmosphere. I have the envelopes, the Ace of Hearts. I have the song, which suggests a loss. That's why I'm not very happy. I don't smile much because if you are listening to the lyrics, the guy is in pain. The process, like writing the scripts, and this is possible, let's do it. This is not possible, let's find a method to make it possible. And that's when you become original. Like the topics I came up with, it was not my intention, but I started fooling magicians. Whoa, how do you do it? It's not possible. We don't know how it's done. Because in order to make that possible, I started thinking, not buying from dealers, but, oh, With all the tools that I had collected through throughout the years, I just thought that that you are about to see tonight is possible.
But there were things that you actually had made yourself, as opposed to being like a dealer item that, and that's what General Magic seems like to me, would be something that someone can go and buy a trick off the shelf, but they put their own personality and something into it. Whereas a manipulation, you know, you're actually doing something completely creative on your own.
Somehow. I agree with that process. But, and I saw many, many good acts with that principle, okay? I like this, this effect. I will just adapt it to my own personality. And sometimes great magicians, great acts are possible to be seen. The thing is that I also did that. I like this. I will do the split fan or the single production according my personality. But at the same time, I was also writing what I wanted to see happening on stage. And what you see now, the act is a combination between I want to do this with all the things that I has been doing with everything that I started doing in 1999. Because I also had some pieces put together at that time that I didn't want to get rid of, and I had to carefully place it inside of the script, you know, because I had some several manipulations. Whoa, I cannot get rid of this because it's mine. Because in 1999, actually, and if you check the videos of FISM 2000, it's possible to see me performing, and it's possible to see that I already had, not completely different, but among all that card stuff, I had like three or four things that you never had seen before, like original stuff. But the rest was like ordinary standard stuff.
But did they recognize that for you? I mean, I know that they have sometimes an award for originality or something within FISM as well. So were they picking up on that, or did you get points for that?
I never had access to the to the sheets of the jury, but hopefully I had good punctuation in originality. I mean, I was not doing technically. I didn't create a new method to make one card appear or several cards appear, but I think that originality can also be present on the showmanship, on the approach that you do to a certain thing. And actually, I'm curious. I'd like to know how original they think I am, or they thought I was. But yeah, originality is definitely very, very important. Otherwise, magic will won't grow.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's just rehashing the same thing that's already been done, which leads me to the question about how you had first learned. As far as that, I mentioned close up that you were doing, and then teaching Ricardo a little bit. But the as far as split fans and different manipulations that you were doing, is there one process, one teacher, a video, a book, or how did you go about learning when you were in your teens, when you were young?
I started reading, and it was not very easy for me to believe that when magicians that I was watching on TV, that when they made one card or several cards disappear, the cards were just on the back of the hands. So, well, I started trying with one card. Well, maybe it's possible, but this is difficult. After I read a few books, I finally had access to some VHS tapes. I remember I got Card of Art of Card Manipulation. Somehow, Jeff McBride was one of my first teachers because I was watching his videos and learning stuff. Not that I didn't know, because I was reading, but visually was like the first. I learned so many stuff, like the split fan, how to make yourself more skillful, finger practice, lots of things. I don't even remember the amount of things that I learned, but it was very, very, very useful.
But it makes a lot more sense, perhaps, if you're learning by video when you're learning to do manipulation as opposed to reading in a book? Because you said as you're reading in the book, you're thinking, that seems impossible. Then maybe,
yes.
But then
yes,
when
yes,
you
yes,
see
yes,
it
yes,
explained
yes.
on the video, I always say that, of course, a picture's worth 1,000 words, but a video is worth 1,000 pictures.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it'd be so much easier to learn, as you we talked earlier mm-hmm. today about the YouTube generation and so many people mm-hmm. who are learning how to mm-hmm. Do magic, both close-up and stage and whatever, by watching YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really not necessarily a bad thing, necessarily, because at least it's a way for people to learn.
Yeah.
And so
mm-hmm.
you learned first by book and then by tape.
And then by book again, and then other tapes, DVDs, and I'm still reading and watching DVDs.
Yeah.
Not as much as I used to. You know, it's different. Now I have to take care of other stuff. I mm-hmm. have to make sure that my act is working. But, yeah, I have a lot of people that just send me DVDs or some DVDs teaching or DVDs, like, with their acts.
Yeah.
And
well, they're asking you for advice, saying, how does this look and what do you think?
Many times.
Yeah. I would think so, because you're at a certain level now that people would be asking for your advice as a mentor or
that
as a
happens.
Teacher or something, you know, then like that as well, particularly that, since you've opened up as a full-time professional magician.
That happens many times. And also when I'm attending in a magic convention, mm-hmm. Usually there's a competition, right?
Here.
And
you're a judge, I assume, at some of these?
I was invited to be judge. Actually, I had the chance to judge the Grand Prix winner, Yuo Jin, mm-hmm. in Taiwan 2 years or
wow,
maybe 3 years ago. Very good.
Yeah.
And Korean magicians, the
Korean
new generation,
you
know, first,
fantastic.
Second, and third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are fantastic, yeah. And...
as far as... then learning, we're talking about, learning through videos and then teaching other people then too. So do you plan on changing or tweaking your act? I mean, you have an award-winning act. You have something that has taken you years to hone. I'm thinking, for an example, mm-hmm. let's say like Mr. Electric. You and I were chatting earlier about this in which Marvin Roy had said that if you have a good, solid act that is done with music or, you know, without talking, of course, mm-hmm. then it can play anywhere in the world and last forever. And he had and Carol had done their act for such many, many decades.
Yeah.
And so I would think that once that you have a good, solid act, you could work wherever that you want, in casinos and banquet halls and wherever that you want throughout the world, despite yeah. whatever the language barrier is. Do you see yourself of changing that act much at all, or now that it's a solid act? I mean, people want to see that act, I would think.
After FISM 2006, I decided not to change unless I change only the method or very tiny effects.
Yeah.
Because the DVD was released for many different countries. A lot of people got familiar to the act. So when they book, they want to see that.
Sure.
It would be like a flipped coin. Maybe they would like more, maybe they would like less. So I prefer to leave the acts as it is. Maybe I can fix like small details in terms of methods if I can facilitate something. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to take that risk and respect something
right.
that books me. And I don't want to take the risk of make that person or that group of people disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, of course, I have things up my sleeves. I have other ideas, as every magician has, you know.
Well, going back to Mr. Electric, for an example, that he not only did the act as Mr. Electric, but then had the thing with the jewels that he did, a similar kind of an act, but mm-hmm. With Carol, but then was doing a thing with Liberace. So instead of electricity, he was doing something with jewels and diamonds and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, I think that you could, because you can go back then to the same casino and wherever, I think, and say, well, I've got another act that I can show
mm-hmm.
you. So,
mm-hmm.
That could be something, too, that you could say, okay, well, I've got this solid act. I mean, like, if you're a singer and you've got a hit single,
they want to hear
that hit single, but then you've also got mm-hmm. something you're working on and you want to
yeah.
have this other hit.
I have many other things that I don't perform internationally, but I... Of course, I have other material that that I perform mostly in Portugal.
Yeah.
Where?
That's an issue, too, because I didn't mean to stop you right now, because on that thought, with a stage act, it's difficult, for at least in the U.S., we don't have a lot of nightclubs or places where people can go for the general public to see mm-hmm. a show like this. And whenever that someone has an act like that, particularly a convention-type act, it's really more of a variety type of a thing, or I should say an act that fits in a variety show,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to doing a 45-minute show. I know you do, and I'm sure you do those kinds of things, but people know an act for this one particular act. We like, again, with Mr. Electric, keep going back to him, of seeing that act on TV, and so they want to book that act. But where, if you're not performing a lot internationally, and when you're working then for a corporate audience, would you go and do that act and then add something more to it? And where
No, usually I don't perform acts when I'm performing for in a private party, a corporate show. Today, this morning, I was on the internet and I closed one contract to perform in Portugal.
Okay.
It's not a corporate event. In this case, it's a wedding, and I don't do weddings for a long, long time, but not as a close-up magician, because I suggest like to perform for all at the same time on a stage. Even it's not a conventional place, even if it's not a theater, maybe it's possible to find the conditions in order to put one show together, 30 or 40 minutes. And I will be performing in a church. It's not being used anymore. There's no crosses, there are no statues, and no
it's just
anything.
A theatrical venue.
Yes. I will have the chance to do not my manipulation act there. It's not a real stage, not other acts, but I will do some pieces with music and some pieces I will just speak. And about having an act for the lifetime, Christopher Hart, for instance,
perfect
a friend of mine,
there too. Okay.
Is doing his act for a long time. And but there's also a lot of magicians that, FISM winners, for instance, very good magicians that disappeared. It's a good thing that we remember the ones that are still performing, but the amount or the percentage of magicians that disappear after they show a good act are bigger than the ones that are still performing. So it's a combination between so many things. Sometimes you have to be a little bit luck to be in the right place in the right time. To be very good or good enough, it depends on the act. For instance, a lot of people say that a CD act in the future will be totally strange and totally weird, because in the future DVDs will be replaced by something else. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe not. Let's see. Let's see. But my act, I'm doing it for 8 years internationally and professionally, and I'm happy because I was accused in a good sense to inspire a lot of magicians, Korean magicians as well, and but it means that I also have competition. So if I'm booked to do my acts, one of the Korean magicians, the new FISM winners, maybe I cannot be performing in the same show. I wouldn't book both, because magicians tolerate, this is a card act, this is another card act. They tolerate, because they are interested to see the methods, the stealings, maybe. I don't. Usually, the first time I see something, I want to lean back and relax and get involved emotionally. But sometimes it's not possible. Of course, it depends on the magician. We cannot blame the audience. It depends. So sometimes I also have them and as competitors, I'm booked. Another card magician is not booked because cards are a very important object in my act. It's like 60 or 70% of my act. So I was telling that magicians, they tolerate a repetition, like one card magician, and after 10 or 20 minutes, another card magician. But for lay audience, it's not good. I wouldn't book two card magicians for the same show. Even the style is different. It's the same kinds of magic. They will make cards appear, even the card, even the cards are colored, or even the techniques are different. You will see cards, transformations, you will see disappearing, the cards disappearing, and some vanishes.
But as a professional magician and earning your income from performing magic, how much of a percentage of the shows you work would you say would be your stage show versus, let's say, strolling magic like at a wedding or something? You do a little bit of both, or
I perform mostly my show, my red envelope act, and the most part of the time that's internationally, mm-hmm. and also the lecture, especially in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Magic conventions, festival, but in festivals I don't do the lecture, only the show many times. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense if I go to China, if I go to Japan. Sometimes I'm booked to go to Japan or to China to perform only one show. The ideal is once there to perform at least during 1 week, like daily. But never know. Sometimes happens if I'm booked for one show. I don't want to miss the chance. I love what I do.
Sure.
I still love traveling. And mm-hmm. I'm always looking forward to have one more gig.
With your act as a manipulator, as opposed, let's say, a stage illusionist is going to have furniture to pack, it is a little bit easier, I would think, to travel with your show to perform.
It is, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's not a stage. It's not an illusion show.
How long does it take to prepare for your show? I mean, once you get there and you do rehearsal, I mean, is it, how long does it take mm-hmm. to...
The first show takes longer, of course, because mm-hmm. only to put my table together, it takes half an hour. You see a very simple table on stage, but it's not that simple. It takes time. There are like 15 pieces that I have to put together mm-hmm. before starting. And after putting the table together, I have to do my rehearsal, my technical rehearsal to check the light, the sounds. Sometimes it takes half an hour, sometimes it takes a little bit less, but sometimes it takes ages. Because it's important to do some adjustments, and it depends. It doesn't depend on me, but also depends on the time they take to adjust according my instructions.
That's the same thing you were talking about earlier, of magic being an art of concealment. In other words, that it is something that is presented that should not be seen. You know, the things are behind your hands, behind your table.
Exactly.
It should look elegant and straightforward and very sleek. Mm-hmm. But if something is peeking out or showing or that there is a flash, then it's no longer art. It's kind of like there is a brush stroke that is obvious in a painting or something.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's, it makes sense. Of course, it's no longer art, or at least it's no longer magical, because people are supposed not to know that the cards are hidden somewhere mm-hmm. In the back palm, behind the hands. As soon as they are seeing something between the fingers, it's difficult. I don't know how he's doing, but I can see it. I can see something. Yeah, that's why I will give some tips regarding this subject later.
Again, it becomes more mechanical than it does become artistic, because then it's like, oh, well, now it's more of a puzzle. You know, where is he hiding this? You know, it's not mystical because he's not fooling me so much as it is that he's clever. There's a difference between being.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's very important to have feedbacks, not only from pals, from magicians, but also from lay audience, which is very interesting, because sometimes you learn more when you hear a real feeling, like I felt like I saw that, and I try. It's not very very easy, but I try to put myself in some lay spectator's skin, because they are the real audience.
Correct.
When we see each other's performing, I'm talking about magicians, mm-hmm. It's always different. Even I try to put myself inside a lay man's skin, it's not the same thing, but I try. It's an exercise. I still feel very, very surprised when I hear something from the lay audience,
mm-hmm.
something I learned from, something that I was not expecting, and in fact, how is it possible? I never thought about that. Yeah, it makes sense that you felt that way. Yeah, and we have to be careful and to pay attention about that. Yeah.
When you developed that act to begin with, you were saying that you had done it really for magicians as a competition act. But also that you were thinking, I want this to be a mystery and entertaining for a lay audience also. It seems that you have melted those perfectly together so that it is something that fools magicians, but also is entertaining to the general public. Was that an accident, or was that something that, you mean, were you going to try to fool magicians and it's like, hey, this happens to also fool normal people?
No, the thing that happens is that my acts, for many people, can be one more manipulation card act.
Yeah.
For many people, okay, it's very, very, very gratifying for me to have like a lay audience, like, by coming to me, David, I'm touched, because the deal is, the most important thing is create emotions. I don't want to fool people. I want to entertain them. That's why I put an act together. That's why I'm not doing tricks.
Yes.
That's why I try to pick that, to write that script, to put everything together in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like the script. It's like a movie, like a small play.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's emotional and drama.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's why
the music and everything all comes
exactly
together.
It's a combination. I feel very happy when the audience is touched.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. It doesn't matter about emotion. It can be okay, I can provoke you a laugh, a tear, but all the emotions are good.
Yeah,
the not feeling nothing is not good. It's not so good, but
right.
Emotions are good. Otherwise,
so what you're saying when you're putting together an act is that you don't think necessarily about trying to fool someone as it is to entertain them in a way that it will hit them emotionally and they will remember it longer.
Oh, absolutely. If I can mark someone, I already had some people watching my show that after I hear that person, okay, sometimes I'm sure I really touched that person, and mm-hmm. She or he will not forget what he just saw. But one more thing, so you were asking me a few seconds ago, and I forgot to mention about your previous question. For magicians, sometimes it's more impressive what I do comparing with lay audience, because mm-hmm. for lay audience it's one more card manipulation act.
Right, right.
For magicians, it's one more card manipulation act, but according with many magicians, oh, but your act is entertaining and I feel very connected and emotionally involved.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the methods, because magicians, okay, I'm trying to get involved, but I know, okay, it's coming up from the sleeve, mm-hmm. from the pocket,
right.
It doesn't matter.
It's going to happen somewhere.
But it happens that a lay audience, just in general, they don't know how things work. If mm-hmm. everything is well performed, is perfect, which is not, they just don't know. Magicians try to, okay, maybe something like this, maybe if it didn't come out from the sleeve, it was for sure from that tiny pocket there.
Yeah.
But at some point, I fool magicians because they are not used to that kind of method, that mm-hmm. kind mm-hmm. of pocket. They never heard about. And then in the lecture, when I'm teaching, sometimes the response is much better than when I do it during my show without revealing.
Yeah.
When they hear the explanation, it's like, whoa! Because when they first see, oh, it must be something like this. But when they know exactly where something's coming from,
yeah.
Whoa!
Yeah. On a completely different level as to how that they can certainly appreciate that. Interesting. Well, I think that magicians do look at things differently. Again, it's kind of like, as you implied, like when I see someone doing cups and balls, my mind leaps immediately to, well, what are their final loads going to be?
You
know,
are they
going to be grapefruits? Are going to be coconuts? Are going to be apples, fruit? You know, what are they going to, mm-hmm. you know, okay, the rest of this is going to be entertaining and like, you know, they're doing mm-hmm. different moves and whatever. But when I look at someone, like I used to watch Bob Reed in England perform when he would do this bottle production. Seen it, I don't know how many times, many of us have, and yet you don't know when he actually does it because it's so entertaining for about 15 minutes of jokes and everything else, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a bottle. It's like, darn, he got me again. Even though that it's coming and you know where it's coming from, I mean, it's not even a secret necessarily. While he has the bottle, you know, jammed in his waistband of his pants, and it's just at the right off moment when he happens to catch you, you know, with that. So it's a fooler every time because of the presentation of the entertainment that you get.
Perfect misdirection.
Yeah, perfect misdirection is through, in his case, his pattern. In your case, it would be through the music and the emotion that you're building, the drama,
mm-hmm.
it sounds like. So that is something that could be used also, I think, you know, within a close-up or for any magic act, if someone is routining a show.
The concept is general for sure.
For I'm all totally magic, sure. regardless, yeah, close-up, yeah. stage, mm-hmm. mentalism, whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. I think to be able to touch the audience in some way that they will remember you, not because, hey, you fooled me, but it's because, Oh, gosh.
It touched me.
It touched my heart. Exactly right. Exactly. And so...
That is gratifying. And you feel renewed. And that's why I still have, and I hope I have energy for a long time to keep doing this. Because it's so good to feel like you are touching people. At the same time, you are getting their energy.
Right.
And it's a huge pleasure to be performing many times.
Oh, sure.
And
sure.
One thing I forgot to mention, between 2004 and 2006, when I worked very, very deep in this act, mm-hmm. in the Red Envelope Act, one of the most important exercises I was doing was like to be slow. Before 2004, mm-hmm. I had a lot of people saying to me that, David, you should, like, this is how I used to hear. David, yeah. you should change the song because it's so melancholic, it doesn't fit you. You are young, blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
After 2004, when I started doing the exercise that I'm going to tell you, and the exercise is just listen to the music and try to act with no objects. Dance to music. Try to feel the flow and try to move as the music goes. Because if there's not a good combination between your moves and the song, it will be two separate things. If you make that two separate things mm-hmm. as one, everything will be different. And the difference was huge. A lot of people were telling me, David, you should change the song. But after I did a very, very deep exercise about dancing the song, feeling the song, suddenly, especially after FISM, oh my God, mm-hmm. how many emails I got asking me the name of the song. It was amazing.
Well, that's interesting. So you fit your pacing to the song.
First inspiration was the song.
Yeah.
When I first heard it in 1998, I started like imagining stuff, imagining the kind of moves I would be doing if I used this song.
What was the song?
Another Night In, Tinder Six.
Another Night In?
Another Night In. And the name of the band is Tinder Sticks.
Tinder Sticks.
Yeah.
For those who might be interested. Yeah. Okay. And so, again, that sometimes that you might have the right music, but you have the wrong pacing. And so, you know, we had a good suggestion by Fielding West when we were chatting on a podcast one time, and he uses a metronome. So this way that you know how to pause and you hear the click, 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 click. And in your mind, before that you would react or move on to the next thing, you let that kind of click, 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 you know, back again. And so if you slow down to the pacing of the song, then it's like, oh, well, it's perfect. But if you're moving fast, you know, from one thing to the other, and the song is slow and melancholy, mm-hmm. then it just doesn't fit. Likewise, if you're slow and you got fast-paced song, that doesn't work either. So you need to meld the two.
And that was happening before 2004.
I understand. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
But it was, I was like shocked. I was shocked when a lot of people started asking, what's the name of the song? And my first feeling was, you're kidding me, right? But so many people.
Yeah.
And I have to believe, I don't want to look or sound arrogant, but I have to believe that the exercise paid off. So I truly recommend. One thing that I was doing, and I also recommend this exercise, and in my lecture, I'm recommending here. This is not my lecture yet. it's when you do a fake transfer.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's not that natural. With a coin, it's kind of easy, but
sure.
With a card, it's a little bit more difficult because mm-hmm. the card is is bigger. And I just recommend to do it. Really do it. A lot of times. Oh, this is the move. If I want to put my card in my left hand...
You should know how it feels, the weight, the
exactly.
temperature, everything, sure.
Yeah, and I really do it. And then when I want to use the retention, mm-hmm. I try to do exactly the same way. And when someone is asking for my advice, I say, please, hold this coin. And you hold this coin.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hold it with your right hand.
Mm-hmm.
please.
Yep, okay.
So no, the coin is here.
Okay, you put it back in your right hand.
Okay,
yes.
You just do something like this.
Yes.
In a very natural way.
Right.
And if I'm recording, did you see that?
Yes,
it's your own natural way to do it.
That's
so
right.
Please do the same, but somehow retain the coin in your first hand.
Yeah, remember that, sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'd learned that from Al Schneider way back in the 70s sometime and taken a private lesson from him, workshop, in which that he was talking about the same thing, that if you're going to be doing a coin transfer, you actually put the coin in your hand so you know what it feels like. So that way when you do the false take, or put and take, the transfer, it's not there. But the action is still the same because you know what it's supposed to feel like. So that's exactly what I think you're talking about.
Yes.
Good advice.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. Any other advice that you would give to people who are wanting to develop an act for competition or to develop an act to take them into being a professional?
I think that they shouldn't think competition.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it's one of the possible ways, but it's not the only way.
Yeah.
I think that first they should choose something that pleases themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be worried about fooling magicians. I was not worried about fooling magicians. It came afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
But you're
trying to develop a commercial act that would actually earn you money, I guess, from a real audience.
Yeah, do something that you want to. Depends a lot. If they want the shorter way, like commercial act, I know it works. It's much easier.
Mm-hmm.
You just pick some effects and you shape it according to your personality.
Sure.
Other thing is, okay, start believing that your dreams are really possible. And sometimes it happened with me. I was dreaming about some amazing magic trick that it wouldn't be possible to put together. But at the same time, I also had dreams which allowed me to find the method how to make something possible. It's true. The advice is try to be faithful to yourself. Don't copy too much. Be inspired. Have your own influences, copy as less as possible.
Whenever you copy, you're just going to be a copy of somebody else. You're never going to be original if you're always copying.
You can succeed, but only in a small amount of time. So be yourself and believe in yourself, no matter what you hear from others. Okay. Be inspired by others. Don't rip them off.
Yeah.
And take risks. It's impossible. It's a hard answer. Take risks. Very important to take risks.
Well, that leads me to my last question. Because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, I always like to ask my guests, what is your magic word? Now, it could be a phrase. It could be a mantra, something that you live by, you know, something that you believe in. You just said take risks. I mean, that is something that's good advice, certainly. But, I mean, what is it that is important to you? What drives you? What's important? It could be a word or a phrase, or it doesn't have to be just a word.
Yeah. The most important thing for me, not only in magic but in general, is never forget that the person next to me feels exactly like I feel. So if I'm not nice with that person, it's exactly the same that someone is not nice to me. We are not the center of the world. We are just a tiny little thing here, and sometimes we have ego. Sometimes we have a too much big ego. Yeah, if you want to add it and put it, without the mistakes,
No. So yeah, that makes sense. That just recognize that we are just a small part of a bigger thing.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Very good. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. That was David Souza here from Portugal. And
this
was really good. I really got a lot out of this. I hope you guys did too.
I hope so.
Okay. Thanks.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
For the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. My regular listeners will notice that we are using different music for this podcast with David Souza. Instead, we are using the song called Another Night In by Tindersticks. That's Tindersticks, all one word. For those of you who might be interested in doing a little Google search and trying to locate it for yourselves. Well, I thank you very much for listening to this episode. And for more information and for some video of his Red Envelope Act, as well as other pictures of David Souza, be sure to visit themagicwordpodcast.com. There you will also be able to donate to the cause, as well as do a little shopping in the online shop or through the PayPal shop, where you'll find some interesting items that have been talked about on previous episodes here on The Magic Word. I also encourage you to like our Facebook page on The Magic Word Podcast, where you can join the discussion and offer your suggestions for any upcoming podcasts that you would like to hear. So until next time, this is Scotty out.